The Umbrella Hour is brought to you by the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, also known by its acronym IICS. Our guest this hour is Dr. Carol Clark, who is the founder of the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, a non-traditional institute that offers working adults the opportunity to embrace school without forfeiting their work or home life. Welcome to the Umbrella Hour, Dr. Clark.
Thank you, Dr. Goldbauer and Sander Cake. It's so wonderful to be here.
Since you are the founder, tell us about what inspired you to do the startup.
Sure. So I personally started out as a mental health counselor. I'm a licensed mental health counselor. And I didn't want to go the traditional route of going for a doctorate in psychology. The numbers just didn't work for me. So I discovered that I could be certified and specialize in sex therapy. And early on in my career, back in the 90s, I took a training in sex therapy and learned all things to do with human sexuality. And from there, I started my own certification program to certify others. And then it just morphed into the IICS, the Institute, to offer a PhD in sex therapy. On my journey, I had attended the Institute for Advanced Study of Human Sexuality in San Francisco. That's no longer in existence, but that's where I got my PhD in human sexuality. And so there's so few schools that offer this kind of training that it just was a gradual progression. And in 2016, we launched IICS, and it's grown enormously. And we are educating people, training people around the world in sex therapy and other certifications, including sexuality and disabilities, gender care, sex offending therapy, kink aware therapy, behavioral and substance addiction. And I know I'm forgetting one. I'll jump in as soon as it pops back into my head.
Hypnotherapy.
Thank you, Dr. Goldbauer. Yes, hypnotherapy and sexuality. So it's not just learning how to do hypnosis, which is part of the program, but applying it with sexual dysfunctions and disorders. Thank you.
Now, I know that the school is based in Florida. So it's international because people can attend courses virtually, but it's based in Florida. And one of the things that I learned when I moved to Florida, I'm in Oregon now, but when I was living in Florida, is that Florida is very different from all of the other states in that you have to be licensed as a sex therapist. You can't just be a licensed social worker or professional counselor or mental health counselor or marriage and family therapist and take some coursework in sex therapy and then market yourself. You actually have to have a special designation. You have to go through training and get certified in order to be a sex therapist in Florida. Am I correct in that? And
yeah,
is it the only state that does that?
Yeah, let me clarify the terminology because a lot of people get confused with terminology. So first we have our license. So people in different states, maybe different countries, are licensed to do whatever work they do. So for instance, I'm licensed by the state of Florida as a mental health counselor. We have licensed clinical social workers, licensed marriage and family therapists, licensed psychologists. Okay, so that's a designation that you earn through the state or jurisdiction in which you practice. Now, in order to be licensed, the different states, I'll speak about the states here, the different states don't have the ability or the time to look at every institute or university that students attend. So they require that you attend an accredited university or institute accredited by the Department of Education. And that way they know that you've taken all the courses and the courses are up to the standards required for licensure. Okay, so that's licensure and accreditation. Now we have certifications, which are through boards. So various boards like a board of medicine, a board of marriage and family therapy and mental health counseling and clinical social work, boards of veterinary medicine. Different boards are comprised of professionals in that particular field that hold people to a particular standard that's been set out, and they say, okay, you've reached the standard, you've taken the training, you've achieved the expertise in this field, and so we will board certify you. Okay, so we have licensing, accreditation, board certification. And what we have here when it comes to sex therapy is in Florida, we're the only state that has regulations for the use of the term sex therapist. So Florida does not license you in sex therapy. It does not certify you in sex therapy. It just says you have to have taken the coursework and done the supervision in the field in order to use the title sex therapist. Okay. So a lot of people think Florida certifies people. They don't. So my institute, for instance, is the IICS. Offers a PhD, but we're not accredited because our sex therapy does not lead to licensure. What we are is licensed, here's another license from the Florida Commission of Independent Education to offer a PhD. And that means we meet criteria, we have oversight, we're monitored, we have to jump through a lot of hoops as if we had accreditation. But we don't need accreditation, nor do any of the accrediting agencies, are they able to license us or accredit us, and we don't need it. Again, doesn't lead to licensure, and our tuition is so low, people really don't need student loans. We offer a payment plan. Other states, when we're talking about other states, countries, wherever you are, they may have different criteria, other countries, for using the title sex therapist, whatever you call yourself. But in the United States, different states do not track that. But what they do is under your licensure, you cannot practice outside your area of expertise. So if you are going to call yourself a sex therapist somewhere else other than Florida, you still need to practice ethically, responsibly, be educated, be an expert in this field, or you put yourself at risk and you're going to do harm.
Thank you so much for going through all of that. I think it's really helpful just for people to understand all the different levels and the expectations. Just as a follow-up question, do you think that there's any advantage to Florida recognizing a person as a sex therapist in a way that's different from all the other states? Is there some advantage to that, do you think?
It came about because back in the 70s, the wild freewheeling 70s, people were running around calling themselves sex therapists and having sex with people, saying, oh, I can help you have an orgasm. I can help you with your sex problems. Just come have sex with me. And Florida, actually at that time, in its wisdom, the administration governance said, we need to protect people and regulate use of the title sex therapist. And they started to do that so that cut down, shut down people calling themselves sex therapists in order to exploit people sexually. Other states, it would be good if they did this, but since they do have regulations around using even the title therapist, that's probably in every state. So how you use the term therapist, you can be looked at for someone who's not a licensed therapist, though, to go out and run around and call themselves a sex therapist, they do open themselves to some kind of liability, civil liability, but it falls on the people who get exploited to say, hey, this person called themselves this. And then it's going to go through the legal process. But even to this day, we still have sex therapists who are legitimate sex therapists who still have people ask them, oh, do you have sex with your clients? And the answer is no, absolutely not.
I've had the same experience when people find out that I'm a clinical sexologist. I've been asked those questions.
And clinical sexologist is a term that's not regulated. And that's why we use it for our school, because there are people who take our program who are not licensed therapists, but they are competent to practice in the field of helping people with their sexuality, with intimacy and sexual dysfunctions and the different things that we have the specializations in, kinky behavior and sex offending and addictions, sex addiction. So there's people that do that work that are not necessarily licensed therapists. But they have a master's degree or the training as a coach, sex coaches, that have met stringent standards that then when they take our PhD program, they can say they're PhDs and have the title doctor, and they're practicing ethically and responsibly.
One of the perks that I enjoyed when I was attending IICS was the fact that I could embrace my home life with school life. It's usually the reverse. You put school ahead of your day life and your work life. That's not the case at IICS. There are a lot of opportunities to take different tracks. Can you talk about those opportunities?
Sure. Our scheduling involves taking live classes, so you have that in-class experience. But we have two sexology tracks. One is Saturdays from 9:30 to 3 each day, and that's Eastern time. The other is 5 days every other month. And that originally allowed people from out of state and other countries even to come into Miami if they wanted to attend in person. Because we do have that option. But now, especially since COVID, people just have really embraced being online, which, by the way, I just want to shout out to me that I've been doing online since 2008. All right, I was way ahead of the curve. So we just kept on going. We did not lose a beat when COVID hit. But we do have a classroom in Miami, and if I'm teaching, I'm in the classroom. But for the most part, we have students that never set foot in Miami. They're always at home and attending live classes so they get that interactive experience. So you can mix up the 5 days with Saturdays. I don't really care as long as you take all the classes. And you are allowed to miss up to three classes and watch recordings, but only up to three unless you're Jewish. And then we make allowances for that because you can't take Saturday classes, but you need to write up a summary. And then we have electives and we have a lot of independent study for you to do, which really is independent. So people can do that on their own time, but we monitor your progress and evaluate what you're learning through supervision slash case consultation hours. And you do a take-home written exam that we've made as AI proof as possible. And the oral exam. So at the end of your program, you do take an oral exam. And I just want to remind everyone there are the individual certifications. So you can take the sex therapy and any of the other certifications independently, just on their own. Or the PhD program includes both the sexology, sex therapy education certification, and one additional certification. So you come away really practical, really able to hit the ground running and do work that you truly enjoy while making a lot of money. Let's face it, that's why we're doing this. So it monetizes. The whole program monetizes in a way that a lot of other PhD programs don't. And that's important to talk to people about because you don't know what you don't know. You don't hear this stuff really from other places very often. But when you go for a PhD, even in psychology, it's really important to say, what can I do with this PhD? And a lot of times it's not a lot. You can maybe teach in the program. Psychologists make money through doing evaluations, forensic work. But if they're going to sit in an office and do counseling, which is what mental health counselors do, it's not going to monetize that much. So you need to have that extra specialty, the extra oomph. And when it comes to sex therapy, that's where you're going to get it. That's where it's going to monetize. Plus, you're going to have a really exciting career. And then having doctor in front of your name is definitely a big perk. It shows that you've really worked hard to attain the status, that extra level of expertise, and implies a trustworthiness, especially when you're talking about sex. So, do you want to see somebody and talk about your intimate sex life with Mr. or Ms. Smith or with Dr. Smith. So it has a benefit there.
You have a model that you use, and this model I've seen spread wide and far, not just mental health care, but in medical health care. They're using the Plissett model. Can you talk a little bit about that?
One of the first things I say about the Plissett model is when we're talking to people who are not therapists, who are specialists, nurses, doctors, coaches, someone else, we use the PLISS part of the model. And I'll tell you what that is in a second. IT at the end of PLICIT is intensive therapy, and that's what therapists do. So everyone else can do the PLISS. The P is for permission. Permission is what we'll say to you when you come see me. I will say something that gives you permission to talk more about sex, about your sex life, about your intimacy problems. And I'll say something that maybe reflects back what you're talking to me about, that gives some indication that I really get it, that I know what's going on for you. So it's permission. It says, I get it. You can talk to me. I know what's going on here. The LI is limited information. And that's where I will give you a piece of information that you don't already have. So just very short, sweet. Here's something that you might not have known. And this SS is specific suggestions. So here's what you don't know, I'm telling you. And here's something that you can do to address it. So a simple example would be a woman might come see me because she's never had an orgasm, or she's never had an orgasm through penile vaginal intercourse, and she really wants that. And I'll say something like, that sounds really disturbing to you that you've really wanted to have an orgasm with your male partner having his penis inside you, and that's been important to you. And that's something that you care a lot about. And something along those lines. And she'll say, yeah, that's what I need help with. Okay, I got this. So that's the permission statement. The limited information might be, did you know that most women have difficulty having an orgasm through penile vaginal stimulation, through intercourse, because the penis in most simple positions, man on top, for instance, doesn't stimulate the clitoris to the extent that it needs to be stimulated in order to have an orgasm. And she'll say, oh, okay. And now the specific suggestion is going to be, here are some positions that you can try that will allow you to stimulate your clitoris. So it could be a man from behind and use his hand or your hand to stimulate your clitoris. It could be you on top and same thing, use your hand or a vibrator to stimulate your clitoris. It could be just immediately after you're having intercourse, he can pull out and then you have a vibrator or a hand or something else, use a tongue to stimulate your clitoris. And we'll give these suggestions and go home and try that out and then come back and let's talk. Now, if it turns out somebody has some trauma related to having an orgasm, maybe there was some child abuse, sexual abuse, then I'm going to do intensive therapy. And that's when I, the therapist, will do some eye movement desensitization reprocessing, EMDR therapy. You can use whatever other trauma therapy that you use to reprocess, to desensitize those old traumas. And then we'll get back to the LISS. And now look at what you can do to go ahead and have an orgasm in this way, if that's really what you want. I had one couple that I'm remembering that had that problem, and they were having great sex. She was having wonderful orgasms through oral sex, but she had it in her head that it didn't count unless she had it with her husband's penis. And in this instance, it wasn't even an ego thing for the husband. For some men, it is. Oh, my penis has to give you an orgasm. But for other men, they just get these shoulds in their head. Like it should be this way. Should is my number one bad word, by the way. There's no shoulds. It's what would you like? What do you want? And when I actually gave them permission to not have to have an orgasm through penile vaginal intercourse, they went away happy. They're like, oh, okay. We'll just keep doing what we're doing and be happy doing it.
I remember when I saw that movie about Kinsey and setting up his institute and doing the research that he was doing, that he and his wife were having difficulties with intercourse, and they went and saw somebody, and it was just in the movie, and I thought it was so interesting because here was somebody who was studying the sexual behaviors of people, but at the same time didn't really understand the physiological mechanics of the sex act, right? And so I would imagine that you would even have students who have a fascination with maybe the theories that are going to be presented in a course like clinical sexology, or they're interested in working with people on these issues, but might also lack some of the basic understandings of anatomy and physiology and erogenous zones. I mean, I'll just give you an example. It doesn't have to do with sex necessarily, but when I was in massage school back in the late 1980s, they had these skeletons in front of the classroom, right? It was a anatomy and physiology class, and they were wanting us to be familiar with the anatomy, right, of the skeletal structure. They said one was a male skeleton and one was a female skeleton, which was probably, I don't know if they would even do that nowadays, but I raised my hand, and for some reason I had no issue whatsoever asking this question. Maybe it's just because I was in special education as a student, but I raised my hand and I said, "So I'm noticing you said one's male and one's female, but they both have the same set of ribs. I was raised Catholic, right?" And so it's a basic thing about anatomy and physiology that, because of my religious teachings, the religious culture that I was raised in, I had no idea. I would imagine that there's some similar issues going on. And I'm wondering, is the education that the PhD in particular, maybe some of the certificate programs as well, is it building block focused? So that for some people, the beginning of it might be a bit remedial, but for some people, they're learning things that they didn't actually know about. Or you have to be advanced in this subject matter, so to speak, to be able to be successful in a program like this.
We will be taking our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Keg. And our guest this hour is Dr. Carol Clark, who is the founder and CEO of the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Stay tuned. We'll be back shortly.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our first commercial break. You are listening to the Umbrella Hour, and our guest is founder and CEO of the International Institute, known by its acronym IICS, Dr. Carol Clark. Let's get back to the show.
I love that thing about the ribs. We learn this stuff, we take it in without questioning it until it comes up in our lives. And then we say, wait a minute, what about this? So we have 15 content areas in the program. And it's broken up into two classes per content area, and then the rest is independent study. And so we do cover anatomy and physiology from a perspective that looks at how does that impact sexual functioning. The program is clinical, meaning we're working with people. So we try to keep it very much on track with how do I use this information with my clients? And then, of course, we build on that with our case consultation hours. How are you going to use this information? And then if there's something that people have questions about that's not answered in class, we definitely encourage everyone use your independent resources, independent study resources. And the faculty is all available to help with this. So you can always contact us, and everybody's just so responsive. I have the best faculty, including Dr. Goldbauer. And
Thank you.
the other thing I like to say about this is the program has open enrollment, so people start at any time. So it becomes a little bit like a jigsaw puzzle where you might not have all the pieces in the beginning in place forming the picture because you're not going from one step to the next step to the next step. But by the end of the program, you'll have all the pieces and you'll be able to see the whole picture and be able to use the whole thing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm wondering when it comes to, since I was talking about the culture that I was raised in, since the school is international, people anywhere in the world can enroll in the program for either the degree or one of the certificates or more than one. Are there particular cultural issues that are addressed within the program that have to do with, there's all different kinds of cultural issues, but mostly I would say probably religious kinds of cultural issues and the taboos around sexuality and the criminalization of sexual orientations. There's so many different issues, and the role of the man in the relationship versus the woman in a heterosexual relationship. And then also, since sexual orientation, in particular homosexuality, is still criminalized in a lot of countries around the world, if people do want to complete a program like this and they're specifically wanting to work with same-sex couples or people that are in relationships where there's more than two people, how are some of these cultural issues addressed? And I'll bring just one issue up that I shared a recent journal article with on a whole group of, I think, predominantly European academics have put out an article recently that's saying that criticizing female genital mutilation was anti-Islamic, that it was a prejudice, like a European, a colonizer prejudice against the cultural practices of a group of people, primarily in the Middle East and Africa. That's a very third rail topic to discuss, but I would imagine that it's true that there are consequences or repercussions or outcomes, if we want to be generic in how I say it, for a woman who does go through a procedure like that when she's young, that's doing some sort of surgical, I don't want to sound biased, so to say a surgical procedure on their genitals or in the area near that. And again, just cultural issues that might come up that are in different parts of the world. Since you have students coming from all over the world, what are some of the things that you've heard about and what are you covering?
Great question. That's so broad. The perspective we take is to entertain all perspectives. We're open to hearing people's perspectives wherever they are. We want to look at what is the problem. People aren't walking in our doors, wherever our doors may be. Nobody's walking in my door saying, I don't really have a problem with this, but everybody else does, and except maybe addiction. But people walk in our doors because they say, I'm having a problem. So I'm going to listen to their problem. And this is basic therapy or even coaching or anything else. It's define the problem, and then let's look at different possible solutions. Let's look at removing barriers to where you want to be. Sometimes where a person wants to be, occasionally I'll have someone who says they're questioning their gender. They might be transgender, they might be gender non-conforming, gender something else, or they don't want to be something different other than cisgender, which is the gender that matches their biological sex. So we have to first say, you know, what is it that you're looking at here? And I'm not going to be judgmental in any way or tell them what to do. Let's look at what's your process here? What are you questioning? And sometimes it might be somebody's from a culture that says you can't be gay. And what do you do with that? But you're gay. Okay, well, let's talk it through. And you're going to have to make a choice how you want to live. Being gay, for instance, homosexual isn't necessarily a choice, but how you act on it is. So for people who are Orthodox Jews, then it comes down to behavior. So I can help you talk through it, but at the end of the day, it's going to be your choice and it's going to be this or that. I can't make it make it okay, both for you. You either stay in your Jewish faith or you don't, but we'll talk it through. When it comes to female genital mutilation, the World Health Organization said this is a human rights violation. When you mentioned people, women getting this, and then you said, well, younger as children. So right there, we're looking at something being done to children that can be life-threatening, can mutilate them beyond repair, that, you know, we're looking at something and they're not choosing to do it. So there is going to be a bias from the rest of the world that comes into this. But then again, I have to look at when I educate our students about this, and I do, we talk about it from all aspects. In this culture, this is what people do. It's a tradition, and change is coming from within that culture. So it's really not up to me or anyone else to say, stop doing this. We can say, hey, these are the harms. This is the results of this, the consequences. But at the end of the day, the change is going to come from within that culture. We have several students from Africa who are vehemently against the practice and are taking the program in order to work on helping women in their culture to be more sexual, to embrace their bodies and their sexuality in very positive ways. That being said, I just want to say, this is the amazing thing about our school. I just love this. I was teaching that genital mutilation in a class that comes under the sociocultural factors class. And it just so happened that I had one woman in Nigeria, grown up living in Nigeria, who this had been done to her. And I had another woman who had lived in Nigeria, but had emigrated to the United States. She was older than the other one living in Nigeria. She was living in the United States, but she was an older woman. And the two of them entered the conversation about genital mutilation. And it was, I just sat back. Because I know y'all can't see me. I'm European white woman from the Northeast of the United States, raised Christian, kind of, spiritual. So I sat back in this discussion. And the one woman in Nigeria, she was vehemently opposed to doing these procedures. The one that had been done, she was forced. She said, you know, it was done to me. I'm not traumatized. This is what we do. I can't imagine my genitals looking differently than they look. So that's something to think about. We get accustomed to how things look. And frankly, untouched genitals are not attractive to them. They're used to seeing the genitals after the procedures have been done. She said that she's still able to have good sex with her husband. And now we're back to anatomy and physiology. Because you might have your clitoris removed, but that's the outer clitoris. And sorry, people at home, to spring that on you. So I'll give you a moment. Okay. The internal clitoris is quite deep and still has sensation and is capable of stimulation. And this woman was actually educating us all on how you can stimulate the internal clitoris to have sexually satisfying sex. It was just amazing. I just love this school that we actually had these two women in this class to have this discussion in a way that was so deep and meaningful and personal for them in a way that it couldn't be for me.
The Nigerian woman who's living in the United States is a really good example of resiliency.
Yes.
Right? Because it was something that she had experienced as a child, and she was able to, in her own way, integrate it into her own sense of being. She was taking it out of maybe a theoretical or a political or a cultural and making it very personal and not living from day to day traumatized from that experience. You know, because some people, they can have an experience. I see it all the time. I'll hear people say things like, I cry every Christmas because I had such a terrible childhood. And I'm thinking, but you're 50 something years old now.
Right.
Why are you bringing all of that trauma forward with you? I don't think people understand that they have some agency in whether that trauma is present, that emotionality of the trauma that we bring with us. We don't have to do that. So it's just an interesting thing to look at how different people reconcile what they've experienced. And it also shows something that I talk a lot about with the trans community is there's no monolith, even Nigerian women. There's no monolith there, right? We all have different experiences and we have different interpretations and understandings of what we've experienced, which I think is quite beautiful. I don't think that the World Health Organization is going to change their declaration of a human rights violation based on some people are okay with it and some aren't, because I don't think we would do that with the feet binding of the, you know, the Chinese children or women in particular. Right. There's just certain things that get elevated to that level of cruel and unnecessary, even if
Absolutely.
It's ritualistic and cultural. We have to make some decisions about these things. So I'm glad that it's coming up. It's coming up in the discussions. And all of the other students were able to witness that discussion between those two women. I would imagine that would be quite profound.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And because we record our classes, we can go back to people could hear that class, although I'm not sure if I still have that particular class, but I have the memory of it. And just like I related it here, I'll relate that in class when I'm teaching it. And I still have these women that I can go to if anyone did want more information. We've expanded our alumni and have all these people that everyone can turn to. So we have a wonderful network to get these different experiences and ask the questions. So somebody could post on our listserv a question about this or any number of things and say, hey, is anybody out there have experience with this? Or can you speak to this? And somebody on the listserv will be able to respond. One more thing about that is the woman in Nigeria is actually doing her doctoral project. So we do have projects or dissertations. Now, for people who think a project is going to be easier, no, it's not. You have to do a lot of research. You need to become an expert in the field. And then with a dissertation, you're measuring something. You're saying, does this work? Is this hypothesis supported? A project is creating something. And what this Nigerian woman is doing is she's creating the program, training program in sexology, sex therapy, that's going to be relevant for Nigerians and maybe a few other African countries. Africa is huge, let's remember, and it's made up of many different cultures. But she's putting together the program that's going to be relevant for Nigerians specifically. And that's where the change is going to come from within.
We are taking our second commercial break. You are listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. On and Xander Kagg. Our guest this hour is Dr. Carol Clark, who is the founder and CEO of the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, also known as IICS. Let's take our break. We'll be back shortly, so don't go away.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role, just to stay busy. But every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movement and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We are back from our second commercial break. You're listening to The Umbrella Hour with Dr. Ann and Xander Kagg. Our guest is Dr. Carol Clark, founder and CEO of the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. You can check out the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, IICS, at www.clinicalsexologyphd.org. Let's get back to the show.
She's doing that. And once she does that, then people will have this whole program to go to learn about sexuality in that culture and begin affecting change. Change comes from within, as I said. We want to give everyone as much support as possible. People, especially, you know, people who aren't generally academics, you know, they went to school in order to be clinicians. And they're taking our program. They want to learn more about being good clinicians. The research parts is scary. And how do you write a dissertation? And it sounds like so much work. And we break it down piece by piece. We help people through the process. We hold everyone's hand. There's a lot of us. There's myself. There's Dr. Rosler, who's our research director. We assign chairs from our faculty. So everyone gets that personalized handholding. And then there's groups, student groups. You know, we have a WhatsApp group and a Facebook group so that everybody can cheer each other on and help each other. We have a librarian. So everybody gets a lot of support through the dissertation process. And we don't hold you to a specific timetable. We want you to move along, but life gets in the way. And for whatever your challenges are, family, work, anything else, maybe tragedy strikes or something, we work with you on that. We have a flat tuition that, again, I think is very manageable for most people, but we don't charge extra to take extra semesters. If it takes you longer to do your dissertation, we're not charging you more for that. And for people that wonder, why is our tuition so low? It's just a historical thing. The original institute in California, where I went, started out in the 60s, I think, with very low tuition. And they just never raised it that much. And as a couple of other schools came along, they have to be competitive. So we've been gradually raising our tuition, but compared to what you'll spend at a more traditional school, especially compared to what you get, the cost-value ratio is extraordinary. That being said, we do have a scholarship program because there are people in other countries. So if you're in the U.S. or if you're in Europe or Canada, don't get all excited because you probably won't get the scholarship. But people in Africa, people in some Asian countries that have no hope of ever earning as much as we can here in, say, the U.S., we do have a scholarship program for them because we want people to get educated in this area and help the people where they are. It's just so important. We have a payment plan and we'll help you out that way.
Xander had to leave early to make it to an appointment. We have about 2 minutes left. I'd like to give you the opportunity to add anything that you think might be critical and important for those who are listening to this podcast to know.
Thank you for that. Thank you for all your wonderful questions, because you asked questions that allowed me to cover pretty much everything about the program. I want to thank everybody listening who has stayed with us till the end of this podcast. And I just want you to know that if you have more questions about the program, I'm sure you will be provided with my contact information. I am always available. I live for this program. I live to talk to you. That's my thing. So I'm accessible to everybody. You can WhatsApp me from other countries. You can text me from the US. I love to talk with you. You can take a free class if you go to either of our websites. We offer a free tryout class so you can take it. You can get to see me and see other people taking the program, ask them questions, and sit through a class and see if it feels good to you. It's always good to try something on before you buy it. So you can absolutely do that. And check out our websites, because I've spent a lot of time going over and over and over the websites and trying to get all the information there. But again, if there's something that you miss or it's not clear, reach out to me. There's contact us. You can call me directly. I look forward to hearing from you, seeing you. And if you join our program, either our certifications or the PhD program, it is a wonderful experience, and it will change your life moving forward in your career and what you do with your life. You'll know that you're really doing something wonderful, very much needed, making the world a better place, making people's lives better, doing something that very few people can or want to do. And it's awesome. I love my job.
Thank you, Dr. Clark. We have come to the end of the Umbrella Hour. You've been listening to Dr. Carol Clark, the founder and CEO of the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. You can find more information on the Institute, which is listed on the website under www.clinicalsexologyphd.org. Until next time, thank you for listening.